Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Tuesday. You know what that means. We are being joined once again by the wonderful Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com, on social media at JUMOSQ. Justice, phenomenal to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm ready for warm weather, though.
Man, February is the worst. First of all, let's start with that. Football dies. We don't have March Madness yet. There's not really it's a bad month. It's cold as hell. And everyone's just ready for spring and March Madness and everything like that. Girl Scout cookies, Shamrock Shakes, all the beautiful things. I know Shamrock Shakes are already out, but I digress. March is way better, and I'm ready to be done with February.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Are you pro Shamrock Shake, or are you the one that feels like it tastes like toothpaste?
No, not tastes like toothpaste. I had it. I don't do it regularly on a year-to-year basis, but I'm not going to turn it down.
I am a pro Shamrock Shake, but I got one from my son for the first time, and he had a drink of it. He's like, this is awesome. Then he had like one more sip and he's like, actually I'm good. So, I don't know. It seems to be a polarizing milkshake, to say the least. We're off the rails already. Let's immediately get into a couple of things that we wanted to discuss, obviously from a Packers standpoint. Interesting report from Rob Domofsky. Not a ton of new stuff here, but some frustration, it seems like, from those within the Packers organization with Jaire Alexander, specifically with his ability to stay out on the field, which is not a surprise. He's played half of his games over the last four seasons, was even worse from that standpoint this year. And yeah, you can understand why. But any just kind of thoughts and takeaways on that update from Rob and his article in totality?
Not surprising, right? I always felt like we've had all these reports and feelings and guesses and stuff like that, but we've never had the team outright come out and say, you know, there's been an issue with Jaire staying on the field. My whole thing is like they're non-correlated injuries. I don't know how he attacked rehab, right? I mean, that's a piece that I don't know. Sure seems like he just tried to come back to the field too early and, ended up getting dinged up again. And that's not what you want to see, but it's just hard for me to wrap my head around holding that against the guy. But I guess we've kind of seen that before, right? I mean, we've seen it with Za'Darius. We saw Za'Darius week one against, who was it, the Saints, right? He played with a bad back, and then things just went downhill from there. Right. So
wasn't there a Martellus Bennett piece too, where he said that they wanted him to come back too early? I'm not putting a ton of faith in that, but I thought there was something to his.
Well, that's the opposite, right? I mean, if Matt is mad, it's because Jaire was on the field too early.
Correct. That would be the opposite. 1,000,000%. I guess where I come from this standpoint is like, I feel like this is sort of not new territory, or at least in the realm of like, correct me if I'm wrong. Is this not just something that kind of happens in the, like, it's sort of this unbelievable gray area where the difference between hurt and injured sort of exists. And if you're an NFL team, you have to almost kind of push the envelope and say, yeah, we need you out there. Like, it's sort of part of the gig that you have to kind of play through some of them.
What they're mad about is that that's like Jaire returned to the field too early. They got mad about that. He tried to push and get on the field at the end of the season, and then finally at the end they were like, all right, it's too banged up, like he's got to go on IR. So it's not for, I could be completely misunderstanding the situation, it's not for his lack of trying, I don't think so.
Yeah, it seems like, I guess it seems like not for lack of trying. It certainly doesn't seem like that on that point. Like you said, he had the article on The Athletic that Matt Schneidman did with him, where it seemed like he stayed here on the bye week to rehab everything and do everything in his power. I don't know. It also just feels, and I could easily be wrong on this as well, it feels like there's frustration of like him not, I thought there was something specifically in the article that said like not being able to play through injuries or something to that extent.
Interesting. I don't, I don't know, because it seemed like he wanted to be out there, and you know,
yeah,
I mean, he did push himself onto the field and then got injured again against who was it, the Bears?
They came back.
So I don't know. Against the Bears. It's a weird situation. I just, the fear in the back of my head is everyone, all the Packers fans have already moved on and are like, oh yeah, you get rid of Jair for, really, it's not the cap space this year, it's the cap space next season, right? Yeah. I mean, that's when it makes the biggest difference. You're getting like what, like $6 million of cap space this year? You can't buy another corner for that. Luckily, the Packers have cap space, so like they don't need the money for that. But next year is when, you know, they'll get what, like they'll free up like $20 million or something like that by not keeping him. My big worry, we release a cornerback whose last two seasons he's made all pro when he's played more than half of the games, and now he's wearing purple and gold, man. I don't need that. Or wearing blue and silver.
Blue and silver, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, either one of those. Like, both of those teams have cap space, by the way. I don't know if you've seen Detroit's situation. Oh, yeah. I know we've talked about Minnesota's a little bit where, you know, they have a ton of free agents, right? But they have cap space because they have a ton of expiring contracts. But Detroit's actually got cap space. So I wouldn't be surprised, man. I mean, the way the Packers do things, like, you can't really get back at them unless you sign with the division rival. Like, that's just kind of how they do the cold calculated thing. And then the players on the other end are like, all right, I'll go try to beat you. And it's very possible that it'll happen. So careful what you wish for. I mean,
you know who would fit well in that Brian Flores defense if he was healthy and good to go?
Yep.
Especially
if like they can't sign Byron Murphy, right? Like they're just priced out of that. And then they're like, oh, we'll just get Jair Alexander on the cheap. And it's like, you might be better than Brian Murphy, at least in the short term.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of the pickle that the Packers are in. Again, I the way that the offseason is constructed and like the scheduling works and the Packers cap situation, there's no deadline on Jair's deal in terms of like a roster bonus or anything like that. If I'm the Packers, I'm holding on to him until Detroit and Minnesota to spend a little bit of that cap space.
That's going to be the really interesting thing, just in general, is like there's no rush for them to do this. They could wait until they get another corner in. They could wait till after the draft to see if they're able to draft somebody. They could wait till the draft and they get to the day three and some team wasn't able to address corner in the draft or free agency and now is desperate for a corner and maybe is willing to give Green Bay something in return. Like there's no deadline here. They could even keep him through camp to see how he comes into training camp and if he's motivated, excited, ready to go, and feels like, hey, this is like prime Jair we're getting. Like, all right, keep him. And if you get it, you know, start a camp, there's any issues or he doesn't want to be there or whatever, again, you can kind of make that decision at any point. So like the window is from like now until basically like training camp. And there's a variety of different points that that could take place. The whole thing is massively intriguing to me.
Yeah. Again, because a lot of movement, right? I mean, who is it? Andrew Brandt always talks about like deadline spur action and all that stuff. There's really no deadline here. I mean, it's a difference of $6 million on the salary cap. The Packers don't really need that. I mean, maybe they'll need it by the draft.
Maybe, yeah.
But they should have enough cap space to be playing around, like even give like Zach Tom an extension. You know, all
They could do whatever they need to do, right? Like even if they needed it, they could open it other ways if they needed to give themselves, to buy themselves more time to figure it out if they absolutely needed to. So yeah, there's really not going to be any rush on it.
Yeah, if I see Jair released first day of free agency, I guess my immediate reaction would be
they signed someone.
Oh, we are blitzing the start of free agency because why did we need that $6 million, you know, immediately, right?
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't make sense. So, yeah, man, that's just kind of how I feel about the situation. I do, like, with all the leaking and stuff like that, what do we have to have, like the doomsday clock? Like we're 15 seconds till midnight with the Jair Alexander release. It's coming at some point, but we're probably just gonna have to wait a couple more weeks.
Are you of the mind like me that there's not really any trade value there, that it would be a release, or do you think there's a conditional 7th, 6th, 5th, whatever it might be, waiting from somebody?
I mean, I could see a team do it. I mean, a team just traded for Preston Smith to sit him in the playoffs, right? So, like, I don't want to say never. I bet it would come with a contract restructure.
It would have to. So like, that would be the thing, right? Like you're trading for him to have to restructure him. So you'd almost have to feel like it was done ahead of time. I mean, if it's a conditional, then you, if it's like a conditional seventh, it's like he would have to meet the conditions of the trade in order to send the seventh anyway. So if you're like some team that's like, you know what, he might not, you know, negotiate with us if he were a free agent. You could throw a conditional seventh at Green Bay and say, hey, we want exclusive negotiating rights with this player and we'll negotiate it. And if we don't work anything out, then we'll just cut him and we're not going to, it's not going to cost us anything in the end anyway. I could maybe see something like that.
Yeah. Like a sixth that turns into a fifth if first day something, of the league year in 2025 or something like, or 2026 in my years all mixed up. I don't even know what the future is anymore. I wouldn't expect, like, even if it, he does get traded, like it's not going to be for more than like concrete six. I don't think someone trades a fifth.
I don't think so either.
Maybe it can escalate to a fifth, but I would be pretty surprised if it was more than a sixth.
I would agree. I'm expecting nothing, hoping for something, and will be pleasantly surprised if they get anything in return. But never know. Like you said, Preston Smith got traded. Luka Doncic got traded for pennies on the dollars. Anything can happen anymore. So you never quite know. All right. T. Higgins franchise tag. Any sort of potential dream that would be a Green Bay Packer T. Higgins reunion, or like not reunion, but union, would seem to be pretty much dead. I think at this point, would you agree? Or is there still, I think it was already dead, but is there any opportunity now that the franchise tag is on him?
I doubt it. That's a lot of money for a player who, again, we talked about him and just kind of like how the receivers fit in this draft or in this free agency class and all that stuff. And the Packers really need a guy who can take the top off the defense more than anything. And Higgins isn't necessarily that. Like he's a ball winner. He's all sorts of things. It's why he's going to get paid a ton of money, but he's not the take the top off the defense guy. And it's kind of hard to justify not a perfect pick for a massive contract. Plus it's a non-exclusive tender, right? Is what is being reported. So you have to,
I think that is correct. Yep.
So you have to give him a contract that the Bengals won't match. Right. And then you have to give up a first round pick on top of that. Is it one first or two firsts?
So the first and third, two firsts. I'd have to look at it. Like it's such a non-starter for me. Like I went and looked at him in great detail just because, again, people are interested in T. Higgins. He's the top wide receiver on the market, like just doing the due diligence. Right. And then of course, like if they do sign him, I've got some like homework done already, so I don't have to start from scratch. My evaluation of him, if he was like a free agent, was like, I would probably entertain like somewhere between 18 and 22 million per year, knowing damn well that he's like probably getting closer to the Ayuk number of somewhere close to like 30 million per year on like a 4-year deal. And I like, even without any trade compensation or anything going back to the Bengals, like just if you were a free agent, like personally, I would cap it around like 18 to 22 mil per year. And he's going to get more than that on the open market. And now you have to trade draft cap. It's just such a complete non-starter to me that I didn't even look into like what the franchise compensation would be in return for Cincinnati.
Yeah. Even with the non-exclusive franchise tag, it gets a little messy, right? Just because of that extra pick and stuff like that. And how much that changes. Like if he would have hit the free market and you can, I'm not saying the Josh Jacobs deal in terms of the numbers, but in terms of the structure where all the guarantees are in year one, and then you can kind of manipulate it from that year on where it's like,
sure.
You're just giving him to us. All right. We'll just take him and we'll pay the signing bonus and then we'll figure it out from there. Right. Like I think that makes more sense, but if he's not going to hit the open market, the trade market is not a situation where I think the Packers are really going to entertain calls like for the wide receiver position, unless it's a guy like DK, again, I don't want to get on the soapbox again, but like DK is kind of like the perfect fit for what the Packers need right now. Right. They need a Christian Watson replacement. There's not too many of those guys, right? But at the same time, if the alternative is pay Higgins a ton of money and a first round draft pick and kind of have a little bit of a square peg in a round hole, like it's not a great situation to be in. There's probably better ways to use that draft pick, better ways to use that draft capital or the salary cap
money. I was going to say if Green Bay traded a first round pick and gave, let's just say, $28 million per year for a player and it's a wide receiver, I would probably lose my mind. Like
it doesn't, that needs to be doesn't run a 4.4.
Yes. That needs to be a pass rusher or probably bust at that point. I don't think there's anything else that could really even get me close to that outside of something like Crosby or Garrett or something like that. Yeah, that would be a tough pill to swallow, especially if like Crosby went somewhere else for something similar. I think I would lose my mind.
Yeah, pass rusher is the one again where I'm like, big swing, just like find a super talented player and pay the price. Wide receiver is more of like, this is the role we need to fill. And Higgins, unfortunately, just kind of doesn't fit that role to a T.
I don't know why I didn't put this together sooner. I just posted this on Twitter a little bit ago. But the rumor, and it's still been kind of back and forth from what I've seen, but that it could be Packers Steelers in Ireland. And the leader in the clubhouse from a Vegas standpoint to land Aaron Rodgers is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Could we see in Ireland Aaron Rodgers versus the Green Bay Packers bright and early at what, 8:30, 9:30 a.m.? Could we see it, Justice?
Maybe. I mean, how much would Peacock pay for that?
A lot of potatoes. A lot of Ireland potatoes they would pay for that game.
Yeah, I mean, it'd probably be pretty fun to go to. Man, we'll see what happens with Rodgers. Again, I'm still unsold that he would sign for something less than like $35 million a year with how much money he's made and stuff. So we'll see.
Going to be interesting. I'm sign me up. Rodgers versus the Packers in Ireland. Packers Steelers.
I mean, it's probably a good time, good party, all that stuff. I mean, two huge fan base. I mean, could you imagine the invasion that would be on Ireland?
It's
Packers just gonna be fans and Steelers fans, and it's Steelers getting Rodgers, and it's the Packers playing Rodgers for the first time, right? Yeah, first time since he left. Like, dude, I mean, the island might sink under that weight.
Can't wait to be there. It's going to be epic. My plan is to go to Ireland if it's there. That's the plan so far. We'll see if it actually comes to fruition or not, but would be a blast to say the least. All right. We gave each other some homework this past week. Two free agents, two draft picks, Paulson Adebo, Rasul Douglas, Elik Ayomanar, and Savion Williams were our four homework assignments for this week. Got the opportunity to, I'd watched Douglas previously, but got the opportunity to watch the other three. Where do you want to start? Who do you want to start with?
Dealer's choice. Go for it.
Let's go NFL first. So let's start with Paulson Adebo. He's probably going to be the thumbnail for today's episode anyway. So let's start there. Paulson Adebo, Green Bay Packers. I'll let you go first. Your thoughts on, I've seen your article recently, no spoilers, but could this be a fit?
Yeah. So background on Adebo, he's from Texas. I think he's from like the Dallas area. He's from like North Texas. Was a wide receiver prospect, committed to Notre Dame actually as a wide receiver, then ended up going to Stanford as a defensive back. Had huge amount of like PBUs. Like his first year as a starter, I think he had like 21 or something like that. Ended up bringing down like 8 interceptions over his college career. He kind of had like a, it's hard to say an off year because it wasn't an off year, but he was like freshman All-American. His freshman year, he had a little bit of a quieter sophomore season, was being mocked as like a mid first round pick for that 2020 draft, ended up going back to school, and then COVID happens. And he's one of the guys who ends up opting out. So no one has film on him for like, I think it was like 600 days between his last game at Stanford and then week one with the Saints against the Packers. And that, you know, that nasty, nasty game where Rodgers actually threw him an interception on a play where he ended up covering Devontae Adams. So he ends up sliding down to like the third round. Very athletic player, all that stuff. It's interesting because you watch this film, there's not a whole lot of stuff that's like one-to-one translatable from like a scheme standpoint between what the Saints do and what the Packers do, because Dennis Allen is just going to sit back and play man all game, right?
Yeah,
that's just kind of what they do, and that's obviously not what the Packers do. I kind of think that Adebo's skills are almost better in the Packers system than they are in that system. And that's not an end-all, be-all thing. Like, oh, he hasn't played in the system yet. We can't do. Xavier McKinney played in nothing like what Halfley is running, and correct. Xavier McKinney made first-team All-Pro transitioning to this game, right? So, I think Adebo has a lot of ball skills. I think his trigger is better than it looks like on film a lot. Like you can find a lot of good clips of his trigger.
It's up and down. It's like very sporadic. There are plays where it looks awesome.
There.
Yes, it's there. It's very much there. Very much
it's,
there.
It's there, but I do wonder, like, if you are playing in man coverage all the time, maybe that's why you're not biting on all these underneath routes. Well, if they run a double move, it's a touchdown, right? Someone's hitting their head on the goalpost. So I think that's interesting. He's a young guy. That's something that you can't really say about a lot of these cornerbacks in this class. I mean, you know, a little bit of foreshadowing. I did see Rasul. I understand the concerns about the deep speed. He is on the wrong side of 28. All of the top cornerbacks in this class, outside of basically Adebo, who Byron Murphy, so who knows if he's going to end up hitting the market again. The Vikings have the money. And then Asante Samuel Jr., who just, you know, who knows about his injury situation. I think that's going to be the kind of the big red flag there. Everyone's on the older side, right? So you're thinking, you know, speed is going to decline, all this stuff. Adebo is one of these guys who, you know, you might be catching him at the right time. You might still have a full contract of, you know, premier player
progression. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
26 in July, by the way, for he's 25 years old right now, not 26 till July for Adebo. So prime of his career.
Right. He does have like a really good back pedal. It's super hard to find that on film because again, they're playing so much man. But I do think that like, you're not going to have the issue with the, cause he's not a guy who has a ton of wiggle, right? But he's not a plank, right? Stiff. Like he's not a board. He's not Eric Stokes where you're like, dude, you might fall over if we ask you to backpedal from a press position and play the deep half, right? I think Adebo can actually do that. And I think, you know, that's the Packers changeup, right? I mean, if you want to talk about like schematically what they do different from the rest of the league and stuff like that, they play a lot of inverted two and it confuses quarterbacks. And what that means is, you know, hey, the safety's playing hot, you know, the safety's lining up high, the cornerback's lining up low, and then they're switching responsibilities. And the quarterback has no idea what the heck is happening because he's seeing the safety move and he's like, oh, okay, there's going to be no one there. Well, nope, there's a corner right there because he's backpedaling immediately. So I think he can do some of that stuff, even though, you know, he doesn't have the greatest wiggle. The big thing is going to be the femur, right? So he broke his femur. That's why he didn't play the second half of the season. Still, like, if you look at his like ball skilled numbers, I'm going to end up pulling this up. I'm sorry.
Take your time.
If you, here we go. Yeah. If you look at, his ball skill numbers, like the amount of people who have had the like PBUs and stuff that he has since he came into the league is a very limited group. Oh my goodness.
I'm recording those 2-2-2s, by the way, and I'm going to play them anytime I'm thinking in the future. It's going to be like, we're on a brief break and it's just going to be justice doing do.
Good. Here we go. So, okay. Pro Football Reference. These are all of the players since Adebo has been drafted who have 43 pass deflections and 10 interceptions. Okay.
Yep.
So this is since 2021. Denzel Ward, Jalen Ramsey, Trayvon Diggs, Pat Surtain Jr., Russell Douglas, and Byron Murphy.
So seven guys, and he's one of them. That's a pretty damn good list.
And it's a good list to be on, right? I mean, I know we foreshadowing. We're talking about the decline of Russell and stuff like that. But outside of that, I mean, those are some of the best cornerbacks in the league, right? Broke his femur. He's already running 20 miles an hour. He's showing it on the treadmill with the videos and stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if like he was like a second wave free agent just because you probably want him in for medicals and stuff like that.
Sure.
But yeah, man. I mean, like at this point, like Byron Murphy is kind of like my number one with the bullet, but like Adebo is kind of right behind him in terms of like cornerbacks that I'd like the team to kind of attack this offseason.
I think I might like Adebo a little bit more just based on age and probably paying him a little bit less would be my guess. If it's the same price, then I have a different take on it.
I don't think it's going to be the same price. Murphy's
yeah, I don't think so either.
I think some of that is because of the injury. I mean, that's part of the risk that you're taking, and that's totally fine. Like that's why he's available. Like again, a 25-year-old who has those kind of ball skills doesn't become available usually. It's because he just broke his damn femur, and he's going to be, you know, healthy basically right as free agency opens up. And then the Saints just being in a horrendous cap situation where I think they're like $60 million over the cap already. They couldn't hire a head coach until after the Super Bowl because they couldn't figure out a guy who wanted that job, right? Aaron Glenn was kind of their 1A there, and he ended up taking the Jets gig and was just like, all clean house. It's faster to clean this house than it is to clean that house. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the Adebo situation. I'm looking at him, and I'm like, not damaged goods, but like a little riskier goods than, Xavier McKinney. He's more of like the Josh Jacobs dice roll. I mean, honestly,
it's a great way of putting it.
Josh Jacobs had, you know, the production decline because of the things around him. It really wasn't because of, you know, his on-field talent or anything like that. I think I kind of view it in the sort of the same way.
Well, we made it 1 week in the books with no football whatsoever. And I don't know about you guys, but I made it in large part because it was a phenomenal week on Prize Picks. And Prize Picks has you set for all of your favorite sports, not just football. And it is such a great time of the year to get invested in college basketball, soccer, pro hoops, and much, much more. And while there's never a bad time to sign up, right now you can download the app and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. So what will your Prize Picks be this week? Here are mine. I'm going with James Harden for LA. I'm also going with Karl Anthony Towns in New York. I think he's going to have a massive week. Lastly, I'm going with Leon Draisaitl for Edmonton as hockey gets back in full swing this upcoming weekend. Just make sure that you don't forget to download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game.
Packers never have injury issues, though, so I can't imagine that they would sign a guy with an injury history and it would come back to bite them in any real way whatsoever. What about the for me, sort of the elephant in the room, which especially this past year was penalties. He had 9 penalties this past year. Sure. I felt like he could have actually had quite a bit more than that. Was extremely grabby at times. Yeah, very handsy. Sometimes
you're going to feel him at the catch point and it's going to cut both ways. Like, he's going to get his hands on balls. He's going to pull guys down. I do think it will help some for sure that he's not going to be in man-to-man coverage and have to be asked to be in a guy's hip pocket the entire time. So like he can go and trigger in space instead of like doing that like little dance that you have to do where it's like, I'm not running over this receiver, but I also want to make that as small of a window as possible by the time the ball gets in. And then I have to time it perfectly. Like I do think that like, I'm not sure that he was necessarily scheme fit there. And I really do think that he could be better in one of these systems where, you know, he didn't even have his eyes on the ball, guys.
Right. And he had that much
Green Bay. In Green Bay, he didn't have that. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, especially him playing the flat, him doing the inverted two stuff where he's backpedaling, playing the deep half. Like, I do think that there's a good amount of upside there. And I think he can play some better ball, too.
How'd you think of him as a tackler?
Fine. I wasn't too worried about it. I mean, probably a tick better than Jair, and Jair's good enough at tackling. I mean,
he's better than Jair, for sure.
I don't think you want him running like blitzes or anything like that, but he can put his nose in the run game.
Yeah. Outside corner, obviously predominantly. I was with you. I had I thought he'd be better in Halfley's scheme than he was in New Orleans. I think this would actually be a benefit to him coming to Green Bay. Obviously the injury issue is a massive concern and you just have to vet that out. If he's good to go and you don't have any concerns and the medical staff's good with it, then I think he becomes a very serious candidate for this team. The penalties definitely gave me some cause for concern. Obviously some of like the inbreakers, the shiftier wide receivers in man coverage gave him more trouble. But again, the ball skills, and then you had talked about it last week, and PFF has this as well, but just like the passer rating when targeted, right? Like, he's been fantastic, especially over the last couple seasons. Like, a lot of these corners, like, even when you get like the good ones, like the passer ratings, like in the 80s or 90s, and that's like a really good number. Passer rating when targeted last year was 67.0. The year before that, 69.9. 2 touchdowns, 7 interceptions when targeted over the last 2 seasons combined per PFF. Like, The raw numbers are fantastic. Obviously, we don't just box score scout. You have to match it up. But like, the physicality is there. The ball skills, to your point, are there. Will get very grabby. Part of the reason that the quarterback rating number is better is because he's got, like, if he's beat, sometimes you just pull the player down. And
the penalties don't count.
The penalties don't count towards that passer rating. And 9 penalties and what? That's probably over a penalty per game for him last year.
This past season particularly, because I think – a couple years ago, it wasn't like this, but this past year, They definitely were. Yeah, quarterbacks, when they're just throwing the ball up, right, to kind of get a dice roll on a penalty, like he was the guy that they were kind of picking on. And you got to remember, he was playing opposite of Lattimore in, you know, a heavy man coverage scheme, right? So unless you really wanted to test Lattimore on the outside, like he was kind of the only other option to kind of throw it out wide.
He had a penalty on 3% of pass coverage snaps last year. So definitely a little bit heavy in that regard. But like you said, it had not been to that extreme or that big of an issue prior to that. And again, I do think him playing in Jeff Halfley's system would cure some of that, not all of that, but some of that as well. So I'm in, again, pending injury and how Green Bay feels about that. Also, like you said, you mentioned the athleticism, 9.54 relative athletic score guy coming out of college as well. So 95th percentile athlete. We know how Goody feels about that. Height, weight, speed.
You see the deep speed. Like the deep speed is 100% there. Like sometimes he'll get beat off the line and you're like, oh crap, this is going to go for six because he's in press man coverage. But he can make up the deep speed and you know, get to the ball for sure.
Big time. No, big fan and very interested to see where he ends up. Hopefully not for a division rival and hopefully in Green Bay if the contract makes sense. All right, Rasul Douglas. I went through a little bit of it last week, but I know you've had the opportunity now to go through some of his tape. Did you feel that the numbers were fantastic over the last couple of seasons? How'd you feel about the tape?
Not good. Not good.
Told you.
I know you were like, you know, short speed, medium speed, long speed, all that. I still think he has his trigger and, you know, he's competitive enough that like he's going to blow up screens and stuff like that.
Yes, he will.
He's going to be felt on the perimeter, all that stuff. But the deep speed, man, I mean, there's times where he's lined up on a tight end and if the tight end beats him off the ball, like he just does not have the long speed to make up for it anymore. And it's like, whoa. You might like he legit might have like 1 year left. Like this might be his last year in the league. Cause once it goes like that, it's not good. And
unless he was battling something like that, we don't know about maybe, or something had some like sort of turf toe or whatever it might be. And maybe it was like underreported or he just didn't say anything and played through it. Unless there was something like that. I totally agree.
Yeah. He's visibly different from an athletic perspective, which is again, kind of the blind spot when you take a 2 year snapshot and stuff like that. That's why you watch the film and all that stuff. But yeah, it was striking. Not the same as it was what 2 years ago when he got all those interceptions and stuff like that. So yeah, I would not enjoy a Rasul reunion at this point. I don't know what a guy like that serves on a roster like this.
Not a special teams guy. If he's not going to be a starter, it's not, he doesn't have versatility as a backup. You would need him as like a locker room guy. And if it's like a 1 year vet minimum, something like that, which I don't think it's going to be obviously, but like, if you get it, something like that, it's like, all right, I guess we'll take him and figure out the rest later. But like, yeah, I would struggle with it. And again, unless there was something where you knew he was banged up and that was the reason for it, and he's not banged up anymore and he's going to have a different gear than he had last year. Outside of that, it's just kind of a hard pass. You just take somebody in the draft instead and say, well, we hope we hit on someone in the draft.
Yeah, I think if you're a team like Jacksonville, he makes a lot more sense, where it's just like, you want another check? We'll give you another check. We are so bad at corner right now, and we have so many holes that like we have to do something at the position. Yeah. Like, let's just take this dice roll and kick the can down the road for another season and before we try to find a long-term answer there. Like, I think that's kind of the role that he's probably going to fill in free agency.
30 years old in August, had 10 penalties himself last year, 118.2 passer rating when targeted, 3 touchdowns, no picks, only 3 pass breakups, which for Rasul is like the name of his game and just couldn't do it. My positives, vet savvy, willing tackler, can play left or right side, assignment sure, still plays with physicality. Feel like he would still be a good fit within Jeff Halfley's defense overall. Negatives, still will gamble and take the bait from time to time. Feels like he's lost a step. Footwork is inconsistent. Will get stuck in the mud in coverage and in space. Short speed, closing speed, deep speed, etc. Outside corner only, no slot corner versatility. Technique didn't look quite as consistent to me. Penalties were a major concern. Doesn't look or feel like the same player coming off a really tough season in Buffalo. The average per year that was expected, and again, this is just per Spotrac and like PFF, was around like PFF's contract expectation for him was 2 years, $26.5 million, $15.25 guaranteed, which was just like a complete non-starter for me. So yeah, I had a really, really tough time with anything to do with that.
Yeah. It's good to whittle down these lists.
It is. it's the only bummer part for me is like, I've been trying to find the guys that I've like really loved or like anything that comes close to as Xavier McKinney of like, oh my God, this is like the Cinderella slipper fits sort of situation. And no matter the position, I just haven't quite got there with anyone yet. Like not with like age, prime of his career, right position, right time, scheme fit, just like everything that McKinney had. And I know those don't come along like very often, but yeah, just having a hard time figuring that 1A perfect player.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers basically, once they signed McKinney and Josh Jacobs, they were like, all right, see you on the draft.
Right? Andre Dillard, and that's it. That's all we need from there on out.
We can't find a kicker. We don't have the money for a backup quarterback, all that stuff, right? That's why we had to do the McManus signing. That's why we had to do the Malik Willis trade. But you do those things because you can get a McKinney and a Josh Jacobs under contract because those guys don't become available too often. That's why I'm excited about a Debo, because I'm like, I think if he's on another team, like if he's a Seahawk, I mean, I guess the Seahawks already have corners, but like, I don't know, name another team. Like, I think they probably just, he's already on an extension, but yeah. The Saints are just in such a bad spot. They let it get to this point, and then he got hurt, which only muddied up the waters even more. And it's like, we might find a starter. We might have a guy who's going to start for us for like the next 5 years. And he's just going to be a free agent. Cool.
I was pulling up my notes for the others while you said that. And you said, that's why I think they could sign a Debo. And I thought you were talking about Debo Samuel for a moment. I'm like, where did this come from? Is it more likely that they get a Debo or a Debo? I think it's more likely they get a Debo in this situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Not a Debo. All right. We've got two rookie wide receivers to take a look at as well. Elik Aominar, I want to say, I'm probably saying it wrong, and Savion Williams, I think I'm saying that right. TCU for Savion Williams, Elik Aominar, Stanford, two very interesting wide receivers. I will be totally transparent here, Justice. I've been watching free agents and specifically top end free agent wide receivers for the last few weeks. So I've been watching Davante Adams and T. Higgins and players like this. So readjusting my eyesight to two rookie third round, you know, ish wide receivers was a little bit of adjustment for my eyes, but two very interesting wide receivers. I'm going to preface this by saying I don't feel like either of them are, I don't know. I don't feel like either of them are like ideal Green Bay Packers, so to speak, but I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the Stanford guy. I want to hear your thoughts on the Stanford guy.
Okay. Let me get my notes out here because I took them on sheet and paper because that's what I did on this one because that's what I had time for. I didn't get the chance to put it in the old computer system yet. I had that very sweet catch versus Syracuse, what I absolutely loved. Does have some jump ball ability. That comeback route that he runs, I think, is going to be a bit of a moneymaker when he's got his size and speed. Like, he's got that comeback route down enough where it's like, that's going to be somewhat of a problem. Like, where I kind of start with some of these players, especially out of college, is like, do you have something, a little bit of like a bread and butter that you can go to? He's got the deep speed. It seems like he has that comeback route. Like, that's a good start to a player that as you're making the transition into the NFL, like overall kind of looks the part. He has the blocking ability on the outside. It's a little bit inconsistent. Certainly not like super dynamic after the catch. I would like to actually see him with his size play a bit more physical. Tracking the ball was very inconsistent down the field. It doesn't always feel super natural to him. Again, this is very much me coming from maybe watching Davante Adams and T. Higgins to going to a rookie wide receiver, but I almost at times got some like Corey Bradford vibes of like, not quite to that extent, but like super talented athlete, but didn't always have the ability to like contort his body or like maybe make the adjustment on the catch, and just some plays that went flat out right off of his hands. Felt like a little times it was almost going too fast for him, the game at times. Didn't think he had the most natural hands in the world, but a lot to like. He ran that deep corner route, ran that really well. I forget who that was against. But just made a couple big time plays down the field. Like, you're going to have to cover him down the field. You're going to have to be aware of where he is. But I don't know. I didn't fall in love with him immediately. But again, this was first glance, interesting player. I do think he's got a couple like good routes that you can run with him. I think he'd be a fun developmental piece if nothing else.
Yeah, my hesitation is just the way that people talk about him, where, you know, they're talking about him as like a second round pick. And that's, you know, yeah. I was expecting to see some sort of like DK guy. Like, the production doesn't necessarily have to match, right?
Correct.
I understand they're at Stanford. They got the guy who's coming up from the FCS level as the head coach. I don't need you to throw this guy 1,000 fade balls just to prove that he has deep speed. But I was like, okay. So he's not really great off of the line. He's not going to do anything after the catch. His deep speed is good for his size, but it's not like he's a elite blazer. He does have the comeback. And I'm like, okay, that's a guy you take probably like in the fifth.
I was saying fifth round.
People are talking about him as like a second round pick. And I'm like,
I'm good.
Man, I really don't know, man. Like I don't see it. I don't see it.
That's just like height. Like,
I think you're hoping he becomes like an Alan Lazard.
Yeah. Which is not what you want to spend a second round pick on.
No.
At all.
No.
Yeah. I was confused. Like I watched him and then went and kind of looked at like where he was. I think on the consensus board, he is 51st. And I was like, wow. Like, and he peaked at 42. He's at 51 right now. And I'm like, that was the first time
where he had a big game against Colorado and everyone was watching Colorado. And that's, I think that's pushing him up a lot. Cause if you take that Colorado game out of his production, it's not good. And I think what the past, what year are we in? 2023, I think he had better production than 2024.
Okay.
I don't know. I think people are wish casting like what he could be a whole lot. Like, I just don't know how many guys get better off of the line. And if he's not going to get better off of the line, I don't know what. Like, he's just a big dude. Which, sure, there's mismatches. If you have a tiny corner out there and he can't, you know, he's scared and, you know, he can't handle a comeback route and stuff like that. Like, sure, you can give him the ball. In the run game, he's going to be a willing guy as a blocker and all that stuff, the body type that you want, all those things. Red zone, you know, if you want to throw the fade or at least threaten the fade, like that's a guy you're probably going to have to game plan for on the defensive side. But like in the middle of the field, I don't think he's super threatening. And I just don't want to take a guy in the second round if he's not threatening at wide receiver. Like there's better ways.
What do you think his agility testing is going to be? I bet he doesn't do it.
He shouldn't.
He should not, right? That would be the thing of like, I don't know that Green Bay would be interested in him. Like he's going to have height, weight, speed. I think those things he's going to have. I think he'll mostly hit those thresholds, but man, if I were him, I would not do the agility test unless he like actually tests really well at it. In which case that, I don't know how much that changes things, but then I'll obviously do it. But he certainly does not look the part of a very agile change of direction wide receiver on tape.
No. For sure not. And I think that's why his production was so streaky, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't really get the ball to him consistently, which if you can't do that in the Pac-12 and ACC, it's not going to mean for you in the NFL, right? Not a big fan.
All right. We're on the same page. Savion Williams. Do you want me to go first again or you want to go first on this one?
I can go first. He's a guy who can get off the ball. Deep speed, all that stuff, has wiggle in his game. They give him the ball as a wildcat guy, cannot catch to save his life.
Except unless it's like a crazy contest, like a crazy spectacular catch, and then he'll come up with a handful here and there. Like the basic ones, though, he can't catch a cold. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. Hard for him to track a ball, all that stuff. He's very interesting. I could see him being a guy that like I definitely get the dice roll on like believing that you could potentially fix some of the issues a lot better than the Stanford kid. Cause I don't know how you get better off the line. It's just like, yeah, stay the same size, but then get quicker. That's not a winning proposal. But if you're like, I can teach this guy how to catch, that would drastically alter your investment for this guy. So I'm hesitantly in on him. I'm just more like curious than anything. Like, what the hell is he going to look like when he's in the NFL? Where the hell do you take him? Because he can't catch. He can't do it.
He's my guy that I am in on if I'm starting a team from scratch or if I'm rebuilding a team. I don't know that I have a role for him in Green. Like, if you should have a role for him no matter what.
Line up wide and just run down the field. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, that's fair. You can also put him in the backfield. I think out of the backfield, he can be very fun as well.
But yeah, I don't know. If you were like what I thought was like a missing piece, if Green Bay didn't have like kind of a gadgety player or whatever, like I feel like you could do it. But man, I really liked him. Like he's somebody I like. I kind of want to be like, yeah, just give
it.
Like
it's hard. You can't ignore the talent. Like you can understand all the flaws and you're still just like, holy crap, man. Like this dude has special traits. He has special traits.
The two Texas Tech plays that he had, the one play where he gets up the field, breaks a couple tackles, spin moves in the open field, takes it for a touchdown. And then I think he was in the backfield and just runs the, like basically the go route right down the middle of the field, right up the seam. And just, again, makes a big explosive play right at the middle. Like, not that he didn't get really covered on the play, so it was drawn up well or whatever, but still made two huge explosive plays in that game. Just really, really fun stuff. He's one of those players that, like, if I'm a head, or like, if I'm a front office or general manager, whatever, who's ever making the decisions, if my head coach or offensive coordinator is being like, I don't want that guy, I'm like, what? Like, you find a way to use that guy. He's way too fun. Great after also, the catch.
If they say I don't want that guy, then I'm like, all right, I don't trust you to get him right. So
we're not touching.
He's like,
no, we're not going to touch it.
Draft board then. Yeah.
I thought he had good body control. Sheds defenders. He's not a great blocker. Not obviously technically proficient at the position. Way too many drops. I liked his versatility. You can kind of line him up a variety of different places. Very unique player, change of direction's good. He's willing to take the hits over the middle. And then he came up with some bizarro spectacular catches, but couldn't catch the easy ones. It's just, he's a very bizarre, intriguing, interesting player that I kind of want to take the bet on, but I know that I'm probably taking quite the gamble and it probably doesn't pay off in the end, but he's very, very fun.
It's for sure a dice roll. I think it can help you in the return game and stuff like that too, just because totally he's doing so much stuff as a Wildcat guy. Like we've seen guys like CPAT.
Kick return seems like perfect for him.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, if you want to move off of Keyshawn at that spot, I mean, that's one way that you can get the guy reps and keep him on the team, have him be a useful, productive guy while you try to teach him the wide receiver position, because he still definitely needs some coaching there.
Yeah. My last note, loaded with talent. I would want him on my team. Don't know that he necessarily fits perfectly for Green Bay, but I'm sure Matt would find a way to use him. I don't think there's any real concern or question about that. He's a very, very fun player. All right. Last but not least, Justice, anything on those four players before we move to your offseason plan?
No, that's kind of it.
You put together, I'm going to be doing this sometime soon. I don't have it together. I'm thinking early next week. I'm thinking probably on Monday is when my podcast is going to be for that, but I'll let you get in on the fun first. What is your ideal offseason plan for Green Bay? You don't have to spoil it all too. Go to acmepackingcompany.com and check out the full article there, but you can tease us with a couple things.
Okay. So I did the deep dives, right? I watched some of these free agents. I ran the numbers on all these free agents. And this is just kind of the plan I would take, right, for each position. Going into the draft, obviously, like, I don't know enough about the draft class to know who's going to be available at some of these picks. I know generally kind of how the top of the draft is supposed to play out. I know generally the guys that are kind of like the Packers types. So start at receiver. Again, we talked about this a lot. I think there's a ton of receivers available in free agency. If you need a one-year stopgap, this is a great year to need a one-year stopgap. I don't think the Packers need a one-year stopgap. I think they need a field stretcher. And that guy could be a one-year stopgap, but it's that specific role, right? And a lot of these guys who are available, who are productive, are on the older side of things, or they just weren't speed guys to start with. So,
yep.
Honestly, I wrote, call about DK Metcalf until you have to sign Marquez Valdes-Scantling and hope for a speedster to drop in the draft, right? And looking at the free agent receivers and kind of what that class looks like, and just knowing like, okay, the Packers aren't going to be interested in a Hollywood Brown, right, as a speedster to stretch the field and stuff like that. That's kind of why I've dove into the draft and why I've watched a guy like a Savion Williams, a day two wide receiver already, stuff yep. like that. I think you just try to address the position with something that makes sense as a fit, right? So like an MVS makes sense as a fit. He's a big guy. You can keep him on the field for all of Matt's run plays. He's still going to be a speed stretcher. You don't need to throw him the ball a ton. That's not the role that we're asking for, right? Christian Watson didn't get thrown the ball more than Kraft or Dobbs or Jaden Reed already. So you're hoping for progression for the younger receivers and just keeping defenses honest. And that's just kind of the approach I would take a receiver. Maybe a guy like a Savion Williams does fall to, you know, third, fourth round, wherever you feel comfortable to roll the dice. And then you're like, oh, okay, we can get off of MVS then if, you know, summer goes the way that we want it to.
Sure.
And if not, all right, then Savion will be returning kicks and we have MVS out there for the regular season until he's ready to contribute as an offensive player.
Love it. Yeah, the wide receiver's by far and away been the toughest one for me. I don't like this idea at all. In my bold predictions yesterday, I said Darius Slayton. I think we talked about him a little bit last week. I'm not advocating for it. Let me be very, very clear. Not particularly my cup of tea. I could just, it depending on the price, PFF's got him at like 12.5 million. I think Spotrac has him even at more on like a 3-year deal, which is just a brutal contract for somebody like that. But if it gets lower and you could get him on like a 1-year, 8 million or something like that, I could see Green Bay being like, yeah, we'll take the 1 year. We'll have somebody that can stretch the field and just hope that the reason he didn't really meet expectations in New York was more due to the awful quarterback play than it was due to Slayton. But I guess I it's been really hard for me to find that wide receiver that makes perfect sense, either draft, free agency, trade. Metcalf does. He's definitely in that realm. Just don't know that I necessarily see it happening. And if it doesn't, I'm running out of options.
Right. 100%. And I think that's why, like, man, MVS. I watched MVS drop all those balls. You don't think it hurt me to write like MVS? Our best option might be to call back MVS for a cheap deal. Like, that's just kind of where they're at though right
yep.
now.
It just goes to show how important Christian Watson. I know like people have differing yeah. feelings. Like, you know,
I mean, even need? MVS, like it's,
yeah,
you don't find an MVS in the fourth round every year.
No,
that was a great pick by the Packers. Like, it's tough to find big guys who are fast and could actually stay on the field as offensive players.
Yep. Yeah. The player they need is like a healthy Christian Watson. That's exactly the type of player that they need on the outside. If they could find it, that would be ideal. It's crazy that like the 1A thing that you're looking for outside of, if you could just get like a premium 1A wide receiver, is like exactly the skill set that Christian Watson has. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah. The next position that I have is defensive end. My solution was just take a big swing on anyone. We have Chase Young and Khalil Mack, two players who are probably top 15 pass rushers over the last 2 years, just in terms of their production and stuff. They're going to be available in free agency. Chase Young, only 25, had played under Jeff Hafley. Khalil Mack, a player who the Packers were interested in before. Obviously he was a different kind of a player at that point.
How in the hell is Chase Young only 25 years old? It feels like if you would have asked me like point blank, like I did a double take. I'm like, oh, Justice just messed up. He's 25 freaking years old. He turns 26 in April.
25-year-old former second overall pick who's his top 15 pass rusher in the league. Yeah.
I would have bet money like 29 years old, like it's somewhere in that range. That's insane. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
The Saints' cap situation is so bad that these guys are able to walk. We need to take advantage of the Saints letting these guys walk. Michael Parsons, Trey Hendrickson are in contract disputes right now, right? Miles Garrett wants out of Cleveland. Who knows what the heck is happening with Max Crosby? I feel like this changes like every single day at this point. Bryce Huff, you know, he's only a pass rush specialist, which is fine. But he was inactive for the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. He's another guy who's right up there in terms of pass rush production. Maybe they just didn't want a one-way player, you know, down the stretch in the Super Bowl for him. Bradley Chubb didn't play the entire past season because he came off of a 2023 ACL tear. He might be a cap casualty. He's another very talented player. So you have all these options. There's no excuse.
Agreed.
Go get one. Go get one before the draft.
And then if you get somebody in the draft too, awesome, even better. Like if you double up on it, no worries. Like we saw what Philly did. Keep building in the trenches. Keep having guys bring them in waves and don't stop pressuring the quarterback ever. Like just keep it coming. No. So yeah, there's no excuse. It's easily 1A for me. And then if you can even, you know, buoy it up even more, awesome, do it. Like there's no downside to doing that. You can never have enough pass rushers.
For sure. Defensive tackle. it's so hard to have a real conversation about this defensive tackle room because I think they were using these guys in the wrong way, right? So we've talked about in the past the TJ Slayton on-off splits and how, you know, their run success was like, run stop success, I guess I should say, was like twice the percentage when Slayton was on the field than when he was off. But then the inverse was true about the pass rush success, right? Basically, they could only stop the run if Slayton was on the field, but then they couldn't rush the passer when Slayton was on the field. I think you have to take a hard look and you have to say Wyatt is going to be our three technique. Kenny Clark is going to be our nose. Sorry, Kenny, you're not getting single teamed. We have to use these single teams on a player who can get after the quarterback better. And Devontae Wyatt's issue hasn't been that he's not a good pass rusher. It's just that he's not been on the field enough. I mean, they've had this deep rotation that they've wanted to use. And I kind of think that this free agency class doesn't really pan out for kind of what they need. Like, if you're looking at the top defensive tackles, I would say it's Oso Odighizuwa and Milton Williams. Yep. And both of those guys at the combine were 280 pounds. And both of those guys are good, productive pass rushers and can't really do anything on rundown. So, like,
Milton especially.
That's only doubling down on the Devontae Wyatt problem, if anything. I think this is the answer is you move Kenny to nose tackle. You have Wyatt play the three, and then you look at the draft for well-rounded defensive tackle who could – maybe he could replace Kenny next year. Maybe he could replace Wyatt next year. Who knows? One of them might be gone. Whoever doesn't fit into that new – role where Wyatt has to be in every down three and Kenny has to be in every down nose, that's the one you pull out and you throw the new defensive tackle in. This is a good defensive tackle class too. Haven't seen all the guys, but like for last year, for example, 25 defensive tackles were invited to the combine. This year, the number is 41. Lots of defensive tackles in this draft. This is a good draft to kind of just be steady at the top and then kind of backfill with depth. Even with the Carl Brooks stuff and the Wooden stuff, like, I don't know, man. Like, if they take two defensive tackles and they replace those guys, I wouldn't cry about it. So,
this was Daniel Jeremiah. Last year at this time, I had potential starter grades on 12 defensive tackles. This year, I have 24 of them. Ridiculous amount of depth at the position in this draft class.
Yeah. This is like the one position, really, where the needs of the Packers and the strengths of the draft kind of fit hand in hand. And the Packers have been lucky in the past couple drafts. I mean, some of it is probably strategic in terms of like, okay, we're just going to go into the offseason with this hole, right? Instead of that hole. But this year, it kind of doesn't mesh with what they need in the same way that they have in the past where, you know, wide receiver, we're talking about that as a position that's lacking talent. That wasn't true the past 2 years when they drafted four of them or whatever, right? Defensive tackle is the one where it's like, yeah, they can go in on draft day drafting two of these guys, and I don't think they would feel bad about it at all, just in terms of like the need and all that stuff. So yeah, Kenny at nose, Wyatt at three, backfill with draft picks.
If they added a big time defensive end, move Kenny to the nose, Devontae stayed at the three, you kept Carl Brooks as a rotational guy, and they drafted two guys in the first four rounds in at defensive tackle, man, I feel awesome about everything. You've got
an improved Quay at inside backer. Yeah, I mean, that changes a lot of things, man.
I'm all in. So that's exactly how I would do it as well. Go get your big swing at defensive end, move a couple things around at defensive tackle. You've got three, you know, good rotational pieces already. Go get two more in a very strong defensive tackle draft. Your linebackers are set, need one corner. Your safeties are great. And you feel unbelievable about what that Jeff Hafley defense could look like next year. And it was already pretty damn good.
Speaking of corner.
All right.
Here's my strategy. If you haven't figured it out yet, sign Byron Murphy or Paulson Adebo in free agency. That's it. It's as simple as that. They're two young guys. I don't know if Murphy is going to be available. I feel like I have to say that every single time we talk about Murphy because I don't want to just keep hyping him up. And then the day before free agency, he signs an extension with the Vikings and people are like, well, what do we do now? Paulson Adebo is still out there. I think, you know, as we talked about earlier in this podcast, I think he would be a nice addition. I just think that those two guys are young guys who are would for sure play out, you know, a 3-year contract in Green Bay. So yeah, go. They're starters. Go grab one of the two starters. Asante Samuel Jr. is another one who I would guess I would have as like an honorable mention, or a passing game coordinator on the defensive side. Was his defensive coordinator with the Chargers a couple years ago. There's some connections there. The only question for me is whether or not that stinger is going to be a lingering issue. And I think that's actually probably a bigger issue than a Deebo's femur, right? I mean, people talk about breaking a bone. It comes back stronger, right? It's just rarely do you see two bone injuries being the same injury, right? A stinger is a totally different thing, especially a stinger that ended up ending his season, right? He was out most of the year. So that's not great. I would consider his injury concerns probably significantly higher than Deebo's. So I'm rolling with the Deebo as my backup plan. Swing for the moon on Byron Murphy. If not, get the little bit riskier goods into Deebo.
I'm sorry, who you say had this stinger? My apologies.
Asante Samuel Jr.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. He can't tackle worth crap anyway. I don't think Green Bay would have any. Plus, he's like 180 dripping wet. He's not going to be Green Bay's type anyway. He's small as hell. Do you look at
Travis? I'm in on a visit. They brought him in on a visit.
That could have been Schadenfreude. What the hell is it called?
Yeah.
Schadenfreude. You know, I don't know. I'm messing it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Ward is interesting. I just like, are you wearing like the off-field stuff?
Yes.
Just like around.
Devastating.
Lost his child and stuff. The way that he talks about it, he's just basically like,
I can't be in San Francisco
anymore. Yeah, he's just like, I got to get out of here. It just reminds me of it. So, he had a little bit of a down year this year. I think using context there is pretty important. Yeah. I mean, I think he's a guy who makes sense. I just don't know, like, what is he going to look like this upcoming season? And maybe, I guess, that's the dice roll that you take if you get priced out of a Murphy or a Deebo or something like that. But Ward has been a guy who's had a lot better film than what he had this past season, but obviously he had gone through a lot.
2023, Travarius Ward, I went and watched, and it was – really fun. Really, really fun. He was fantastic. And then, of course, 2024, Travarius Ward was not. And, like, it's the big thing. It was like, was it just everything that was going on in his life? Which
just
is
like, dude, just like, young. I don't even like, so like, I don't cover the Niners or anything like that, right? But it's just pretty clear. Like, anytime you heard him in an interview, it's just like, man, this guy's head is not in a good space. And I mean, it's understandable. He lost a kid, man. So, like, pretty tough situation. I mean, I'm rooting for the guy for sure.
Big time. And if he does get back to that 2023 form, which again, I like you said, rooting for him every step of the way, would be quite the incredible story for him. And whatever team signed him would get one hell of a corner. That's for sure. Yep. I'm interested in seeing what Green Bay is going to do. I love your offseason plan, Justice. You're always the best. These conversations.
Like,
what's that? Oh, what did we miss? What did we miss?
Kicker.
Brandon McManus, baby.
Just re-sign him. Yeah, it's really that simple. It's going to be him and Nick Folk who are going to be kind of like the sought-after kickers in this free agency class. You already got him in-house. I don't know why they haven't announced the McManus extension already. You're going to do it. Just do it.
What if I could interest you in a transition or franchise tag for Brandon McManus? What do you think the number is off the top of your head?
Five?
It's right around there. It is for the franchise tag, it's 6.45 million for a specialist, 5.83 for a transition tag. I don't know. I think I might put the transition tag on him. I don't think I would franchise tag him. I don't think I want to pay that.
No.
I might transition tag him, or if there was, I guess if I had any concern. You might not need to. If there was any concern I could lose him, I might actually consider doing it. Because if I have to pay one, like if you sign it, like 1 year, 5.8, like, all right, I'm fine. I can handle that. It's a little bit more than I want to pay, but I'd rather that than the alternative.
Yeah, I don't want to have to search for another kicker, man.
Nope.
I don't want
to. Done with that. All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off before the kicker. I also wanted to leave a little bit out there for the readers out there, but that's all right. I appreciate it, son. Where can we find all of your incredible work, my friend?
AcmePackingCompany.com. We're going to run a bunch of polls and discussion posts and stuff like that because it's getting a little slow this week. Hopefully we get some information out there. We'll also figure out probably pretty soon whether or not John Eric Sullivan is going to take that Jaguars GM job or whether he gets offered it, I guess.
Got
the second interview. He's a finalist there. I think
like
he was
a finalist, right?
Yeah, I think he was a finalist with the Raiders too. He had interviewed with all but one of the GM openings. So he's a pretty highly sought after name. Just didn't get the Tennessee job. And if he doesn't get this, he's going to have to wait another year. So,
yeah, hopefully for him, he gets it. Obviously, would hate to lose him. I think like it's always tough to be like, yeah, he's great at his job. I think he is. He's getting a lot of interviews.
He's good in the post-draft interviews. I enjoy him.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. It's so funny. Every single time I like put the rundown together, I only have like a handful of things on the rundown today. And I'm like, well, let's talk about Rodgers and like Higgins really quick, just because like this might be a quicker episode. And then, of course, you and I find things to nerd out about no matter what. But I appreciate it every single week, Justice. We'll do it again next week. Go follow him on social media at JUMOSQ. And of course, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.